Well, welcome. We are so glad that you're a part of this conversation. My name is Rick Gibson. I'm Vice President for Public Affairs and Church Relations at Pepperdine, and I have the opportunity in my new role to travel across the country, and I visit churches in different churches nearly every week. And I find, generally speaking, two types of churches that are out there. And there are churches that have, in some way or another, built a fortress. They're there to defend God. And then there are those that have decided to blend in or engage their community in some way. And I'm not sure which one is exactly right. I'm not sure if balance is needed. But what I do know is that these churches are, many of them are struggling. The churches of Christ are in a moment that I thought that I imagined might come, but I didn't know that I'd live to see it or to be in the middle of it. And I don't know that it's this way everywhere, though I suspect that it is. But we know, and the gentlemen on this stage know, that it is very real on the West Coast and in the Los Angeles area and some beyond. So we're here today to have a conversation. Jason Locke, who is the minister at the College Church of Christ in Fresno, several years ago, the College Church started a program called Renew. And Renew happens every February, and it's a great time for church leaders and church members and people to come together. Several of you I know have joined in on the conversation there, and it has been a very rewarding experience. And here's why it's been rewarding for me. There have been people coming to the table, and we literally sit around tables and during the conference, and even though there's some material that may be presented to us, we sit around the table and have, I think, meaningful conversations. And it's interesting to me to see both, and I'm being a little judgmental here, but from my perspective, both a conservative brother or sister, a progressive brother or sister sitting at the same table with the same question, what do we do? Because they seem to all know we're at a moment. And my hope is, naive as it may sound, that that might drive us to the table together. And so we've decided, and what we learned through Renew was that even though we may call these the Pepperdine Bible Lectures, that sort of design where there are speakers and listeners, we've learned through Renew and other experiences that the conversation is much more effective. And so we're going to try to have a conversation over the next 3 days about West Coast churches, the DNA that's there, some of the challenges that we experience. My job is going to be to keep the audience engaged in the conversation. Jason's job, in a moment, I'll introduce Jason. His job is to engage our panelists in a conversation. And we're going to spend some time trying to hear one another, listen to some ideas. I will ask at the end of our session if there are any takeaways. I'm hopeful that you'll be willing to share what yours might be. I also will let you know in advance that when I walk through the audience and try to take questions, I will ask you to use the microphone. You may say, well, the space isn't really that big. We don't need that. But we are recording this session, and we'd like for those who listen to it online to be able to hear your questions as well. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to have a conversation. We're going to start with maybe one of the most vexing, and that is reaching millennials. We even need some definition around that, and I'm sure our panelists will help us out. I will say this, when I travel to churches, I'm reminded of my favorite scene, one of my favorite scenes in an Indiana Jones movie from my least favorite Indiana Jones movie. So the Temple of Doom is my least favorite. Oh, man, I've already lost some of the audience here. My least favorite Indiana Jones movie.
But I hope you're not counting the crystal skull in that.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's right. But there's a scene in the second one where Indiana Jones finds himself walking into this remote village, and everything seems normal except for one thing. And he realizes, you know what it is, right? Where are the kids? Where are the children? And a mother comes up to him and tries to explain through her grief and tears something that he can't understand, but an interpreter tells him they stole our children. And that sets up the movie. But when I'm visiting churches, I feel that same moment. I walk in and I go, where are the kids? Where are the young people? And that may not be where you are, but I have to tell you, it's where a lot of churches are. And I don't know who's stolen them. I don't know if they're lost. I don't know where they are. But today we're going to ask the question around not just children, but around millennials, about how do we reach them. So let me pray for our time together. I'm going to turn it over to Jason after that. The panel will spend a few moments in discussion, and then we'll engage. And we have just 45 minutes together each day, so it'll be a quick time together. Thank you for being here. Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, we thank you for this day. We thank you for this quiet, beautiful spot where we can consider something that's very near and dear to our heart. That is, what is the present and future story of our churches? Lord, we care deeply about our communities. We care deeply about our part of this world. But Lord, we are seeing changes, and some of them are difficult to understand. We see an absence of leadership. We see our children vacating and leaving. Lord, I recognize that there are people in this room, some who may be challenged by some of the solutions or questions that will be raised today. We know that we're people on different sides of any number of issues. But Lord, I pray that you'll give us open hearts and open minds as together we think, together collectively, as we think about being a witness in this part of the world. Thank you, Lord, for allowing us to come together in this peaceful place to consider these things. I offer this prayer through Jesus. Amen. Jason Locke is a dear friend, a great minister, strategic thinker. Again, the minister, senior minister, preaching minister at the College Church of Christ in Fresno, and he's going to be our panel leader for the next 3 days. We'll have different panelists each day, but let me ask you to show your appreciation and welcome Jason Locke.
Thanks, Rick. I do want to just express just how wonderful it is to have Pepperdine as a partner, especially since Mike Cope's been on board. I felt a real sense of dedication to and willingness to do whatever is needed to help us in the West Coast churches. And it's been just so wonderful to have Rick and Mike be very supportive and wanting to say, what do we need to do and how we get resources to do it? And I think that's been a breath of fresh air. We have a lot of work to do. And today, I think, is a key piece of that conversation. I was fascinated yesterday going to the pre-lectures event with Gene Apple, who is the lead minister at the Eastside Christian Church down in Anaheim. And I'm not a guy who suffers from church envy. I don't really envy other churches. But I did notice that, like his Easter service, I saw a picture tweeted of a huge place where they meet with confetti flying and spotlights going everywhere. It was an amazing experience, I'm sure. They said they had a number, dozens of baptisms that very day. And so it was interesting hearing Gene Apple talk about the 6 years he's been there and transforming that church and going from a church that was declining to a church that today is really growing. And I realized, though, that they had a very different starting place from what our starting places are. For him to go from A to B is not the same as for us to go from A to B. And the same is true with our contemporaries who lead churches in the South or Southeast. Their starting places of renewal and increasing partnership with the mission of God, their starting places are very different from our starting places here on the West Coast. And I'm not a native to the West Coast, so I've come in as a missionary to ask a lot of questions and to learn and to listen. So I've had to be very intentional in learning a lot. And so I'm very appreciative of the story of West Coast churches. But I'm also aware that West Coast churches have grown and our institutions have grown on the backs of what's called the greatest generation, those World War II veterans, who not only grew the churches, but that literally built the churches here on the West Coast. And that was a great thing, but the truth is our churches were built for that generation. Our institutions were built for that generation. This lectureship was built for that generation. And to think about transitioning to a day and time when we have to reach a generation that our churches weren't built for is an incredible challenge. And it is not the same starting place that Gene Apple had. It's not the same starting place that our contemporaries in the South or Southeast have. It's a very different starting place. But if we believe in church renewal, And if we believe in the mission of God, then we have no choice but to hope that God can do something still with us. Otherwise, maybe we do need to kind of think about our future a little bit more soberly. But the elephant in the room that we have here today is thinking about the missing young generation in our churches. It's not the case all the way across the board. So I want to introduce our three panelists today. So we're going to talk together for 15 or so minutes, and then we want to get your input. Rick will go and get your feedback, questions, comments you have for the panelists. So be thinking as you're listening, what resonates with you, where your church finds itself, questions you're asking. What I've tried to do in working with Rick and planning these 3 days is to pick challenges that are bigger than what we can solve with our current skills, our current resources, and our current know-how. We can't fix this problem on our own. We find ourselves like the people of Israel in the wilderness, needing the Lord's manna, needing the Lord's leadership. And if we realize that and we come to terms with that, I think that might not be a bad place to start. But so anyway, we have three folks who I think are going to be incredibly helpful in helping us think today about millennials and how to reach millennials. Chris Goldman preaches for the Northwest Church in Seattle. And, of course, that church, if you know anything about that church, that's the church that they've merged with a Christian church. I don't know how many years ago, ten years ago. It was previously in Sacramento at Rancho Cordova. He and his wife, Kim, have, I think, 2 kids, Pepperdine grad. Shane Hughes preaches at the Campbell Church just outside San Jose. He's been there, 5 years or something? 4 or 5 years, and now in the pulpit for a year or so, something like that. He comes from Campus Ministry in Arkansas, and was an ACU product. So we got Pepperdine, Abilene Christian, and now Harding product on the end here. Rich Little, who preaches here for the University Church. And I know you were in Naperville outside Chicago before that, an Australian native. So helping us think about these things, all of us from different perspectives. And let's see, you and your wife, Heather, have four kids, and you and Natalie have no children. Okay, very good. All right, so What we want to do, and encourage, of course, you guys to keep your comments short, but also you as well. When we come to you, keep your comments short as well. We have a very limited amount of time. But many of our churches, let me just start off with this. Many of our churches suffer from a lack of flexibility. We've done certain things. We have certain programs in place. We have buildings in place. We have all this infrastructure. We have people who lead. But we tend to have a lack of flexibility. Our churches, with our heritage, with our church polity, with our sectarian way of thinking in the past. How is this at odds with the need to reach the younger generation?
One of the things that I observe is that the greatest generation did bring a level of inflexibility, there's no doubt about that the baby boomer generation fought against. But the baby boomer generation, in many ways, has become just as inflexible as the greatest generation. But they think, since they're so innovative and push against the envelope, that naturally the younger generation would be attracted to that. But a lot of things that drive and turn the crank for the baby boomers does not translate well to the millennials and turns them off. And the inflexibility...
example, like
baby boomers brought all the technology into worship, brought the big show, if you want to call it that, all the worship. At our church, we have both acapella and instrumental. Our baby boomers like the big 8-9 member band. The millennials, strip it down, give me an acoustic guitarist and a percussionist, and let me fill Mumford and Sons. And so, but the baby boomers are like, where's the big band? You know, where's the rock and drum and all that kind of stuff? And so those are at odds, and it's the same old thing. Are we listening to the younger generation about what helps them connect with community and connect with God? So I'd throw that in there.
So we traded one kind of inflexibility for another kind of inflexibility.
Yes, and I'm about 3 weeks from being a baby boomer, so I can say that.
Okay.
And feel absolved somehow. So.
All right. Rich or Shane, you want to jump in on that?
I think there's a piece of flexibility that comes from giving up the idea that there's only one way. And I think to move your church almost epistemologically in our way of thinking, that we can think about more than one way to do the same thing that could be meaningful to other people. And I think that's conversation. If you can put a millennial at a table with someone that's older, either their grandparents' age or their parents' age, and let them say, this is why this is meaningful to me, this is why this matters, you'll see their parents' generation, their grandparents' generation light up and say, let me empower you, let me help you. And so one of the things, you know, just in terms of tactics, because I'm very interested in the how are we going to make this happen? We spent a couple of months where all of our communion thoughts were done by people under 30. And we just let that younger generation speak into what communion means to them, what the Lord's Supper looks like for them, why the Eucharist is meaningful to them. And you see all of these connections be created around the room as older generations just able to listen to why the Lord's Supper is meaningful to those millennials. And that it created a new aspect of our community that just didn't exist before that. And that relationship creates flexibility. Without the relationship, why do I care what you want as an old person or a young person? I would argue millennials are pretty inflexible too. But the relationship kind of mediates that.
Yeah, I was going to add the same thing. I think that the inflexibility notion of the greatest generation is equaled only by the inflexibility of the millennials. We have 3,000 students on campus here. We have about 300 that come to our church. And the majority who don't are inflexible on instrumental music. They're inflexible on radical acts of social justice, on other issues that a lot of us on church leadership would resonate with, but we're not in a position or time or season right now where we can confront some of those issues head on. So we've got to acknowledge the universal inflexibility of God's people and try to find, I think, a unifying spirit among all of that. I would add also that we experienced in Naperville that some of the inflexibility of our church leadership comes by us being controlled by the tyranny of the easily offended. We have a number of people in our churches that typically are the easily offended ones, and we tend to default to the easily offended. And we had a family who we loved dearly at our one church, and they would be the ones that would react immediately. And the Jones family, and we would often say, maybe we should put a tagline, keeping the Jones happy for 40 years, you know, outside, because... So unless you're willing to confront some of the elephants in the room that may be around the easily offended, then...
Those elephants are people.
Those elephants are large people, yeah. I mean, they're large, dominant personalities that are absolutely inflexible.
And who is it that has to stand up?
The leadership, I think, has to stand up and find ways to broker that and mediate that. Look, we tend to default to our highest value, and our highest value in Churches of Christ is peace, right? So if you default to your highest value is peace, then you're going to be mediating at the lowest common denominator. Where if your highest value is love, then you're going to take great risks to mediate at the highest common denominator.
Okay, great comments. Let me follow up with something you said, Rich, as you kind of touched into some of the thoughts of millennials that they're inflexible in. And I think, Rick, you mentioned this in comments ahead of time about like some of Kinnaman's observations, and this is Dan Kimball's observations as well, but saying that many of the young people think that we as a church are too judgmental, too political, too homophobic, patriarchal, self-centered, at war with science, on and on and on and on. That they see us belonging to an outdated, outmoded way of thinking and living. True?
Yes.
I wouldn't maybe answer it that easily, that quickly from my experience, simply because I do appreciate the fact that a lot of millennials simply don't want to debate things that they see as absolutely silly discussions. For example, I can resonate with the fact that it is uncompromising that we're active in social justice in our community better than I can resonate with we are uncompromising that no woman will ever stand up front. Those to me are different. And I see how the millennials a little bit can get an arrogance if they're not careful, viewing that the topics we're inflexible about are much more substantial than, I mean, how many of you remember when putting PowerPoint on the screen was a major issue in your churches? Look at all the nodding heads, right? The millennials would say, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. So when I throw at them, well, you're equally inflexible about this worship thing, they would say, yeah, and it's a little bit bigger issue than PowerPoint on a screen. Not understanding maybe the emotional depth of that issue at the time. So I get that. And I do sense that these churches, and there is a number of them that I'm studying, we're talking about in our group tonight, shameless plug, where we're talking about these churches that are doing very well, where millennials are collecting, that do believe in the inerrancy of the scriptures. They do believe in a lot of the things that were just cited. And those churches are exploding with millennials going there. And that does intrigue me because America is aging. It's not just our churches that are aging. America is aging. And millennials are looking for other people their age to hang out with and to be with. And I get that.
I think I want to follow up and explain that. I think, you know, why is the Easter Bunny associated with Easter? Why do we have Christmas trees at Christmas? It's because at some point in the Christian mission, thousands of years ago, people decided to we're gonna choose love and the guidance of the Spirit over what we consider to be exact. And I think that we have gotten missiologically, our mission is lazy. And that's my problem, is that we are no longer asking the questions about what really matters to this culture, what really matters to the people that desperately need to hear Jesus, who are a little bit younger, and what are we doing to reach them? And it, as long as it's, well, you agree with us 100%, and yeah, then you can come and be a part of us. But that's not the story of mission. The story of mission is God's Spirit pushing through nations.
Instead, we're asking what matters to the Joneses.
Right. And so the mission of God needs to be the Spirit of God needs to be our driving force. And let's let doctrine figure itself out. And let's allow doctrine to be a little flexible in terms of those things that, I'm not talking about Scripture, I'm not talking about the Trinity or the power of God. I'm talking about those things that, you know, if we disagreed, we'd probably be okay. And we can move past that.
So let me go to you, Rich. Our churches are really like cruise ships that take a long time to turn. But are there some quick fixes that we should engage in immediately while we're having some bigger conversations? Can you think of, is there anything worth fighting for tomorrow, going back home and starting to fight for? It maybe depend on our context, I know, but.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of dialogue, huge fan of dialogue. And I always encourage church leaders to be in dialogue with other churches in the area that look absolutely nothing like yours. Because we tend to associate with like-minded, like-practiced people. But if we can find church leaders, exemplars, models in our community that we can begin networking with, then it not only breaks stereotypes, it helps inform what we're doing as well. And find ways to begin safely cooperating with those groups, and you tend to find some synergy between churches and between leaders that is not only informative, but I think could set a model for your churches as well. I would just add on the last comment, my church is very different. I mean, we have gay and lesbian men and women members of our church. Half of our church is Democrat. We don't fit the Fox News stereotype that a lot of people would typically categorize. And I think it's changing. You've got the Episcopal, United Methodist Church. The Christian landscape in America looks a lot different today than it does 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, same in our setting is you find that the most powerful comment I've heard in the last few years about this that you could put into practice actually came from Jonathan Stormont. And he made this comment. I wrote down and misquoted, and then he asked for the misquote. He liked the misquote better. And it was simply this, is that if the mission of your church is to reach my generation, the mission of your church isn't big enough to reach my generation. And if I would give any counsel to churches trying to get the younger generation is stop trying to get them. Put them at the leadership table and say, what is a compelling vision and mission for this church that you and your friends want to be part of? Because we're not going to bend our backs every which direction to try to persuade you to come to our church. That's never supposed to be the mission of the church. And when he said that, I wrote it down and I've reflected on it for years since. I think it's one of the wisest comments that have been made. And I was recently in dialogue with a congregation that said their mission, their stated mission is actually to reach that generation. And I have now since noticed numerous churches over the last 3 years that they will tell you that. That is our goal, is to reach that generation. And that generation is kind of saying, that doesn't get us in our in your doors, because we want to be part of something bigger than the self-consumed American Christian that we have observed. And I, this is something else that I get from the millennials. That Josh Rosh was talking about last night, the minimalist movement within his own family. And I know so many of my own kids' counterparts are trying to think about how can we do with less, and how do we not get in the rat race, and how do we avoid buying into this cheap version of American Christianity? And those are valid questions that challenge the very mission of the church. I think that's what I would say to churches. Get them in the room. Our polity model is killing us in this regard. It says if you don't have white hair or gray hair, you're not on staff, you don't belong in leadership meetings. But nowhere did Paul say that the elders of the church should run the church by having only old white guys in a room making all the decisions.
Are any of my elders listening right now?
Yeah. So he never said you can't bring women into the conversation. He never said you can't bring the younger generation that are not elders to the leadership table. Do that. Start there.
I think tactically, one of the things you can do very practically tomorrow is get a mobile website. Your millennials are only on their phones for the most part. If you don't have a mobile website, you're not reaching them. You can't talk to them because they're not listening to the other dialogues. The other thing I recognize is two millennials, two of our young adults, quit their jobs in the last 4 or 5 months because they weren't being mentored in their jobs. There is an incredible hunger in that generation for mentoring, for someone to coach them, to walk beside them. So create in your church a community that not only coaches them, and I love what you said, give them a voice. Because watching Christianity is never good. Doing Christianity is what matters. Living out the gospel, living out, and the only way you do that is if you risk a little bit of authority, a little bit of responsibility, but that's going to pay you back, and you can do that tomorrow.
Jason, one other addendum to this. Something that millennials love, that I love as well, and a lot of us do, is just a desire for authenticity and genuineness. And something that doesn't pass the sniff test is when a church is trying so hard to reach people, it's doing something inauthentic.
Yes.
And disgenuine. As opposed to saying, why don't we discover what our greatest gifts are as a church body and press into those gifts and use those gifts instead of trying to be a conglomeration of all best practices across the scope of Christianity to try to reach as many as possible. When that isn't gift-based, it's not genuine, it's not authentic. Find out what it is that's authentic and genuine based on your gifts, and you're going to attract the right people.
And that's not something we have to go to a conference to get. It's there within us, becoming who we are. Let me turn it over to Rick now for conversation with you all.
So a couple of things come to mind as I listen to you all talk about millennials, and even the way I even brought up the question today. In some ways, we started talking about our own kids. But Kinnaman will tell us that 2 out of 5 millennials will tell you they're just not interested at all because they just simply have a bad impression of the faith community. And so on one hand, we're thinking, and some in our audience may be thinking about our own young people, our own children, those who even knew the faith, those that we've lost. There's a large growing population of people who are just simply not seeing the narrative that we're bringing as any interest at all. And while I ache over that, I see some opportunity in that for us. I mean, I do think that there is a way for us to reach what seems to be a large growing audience that's become disenchanted with the Christian narrative in this country. Well, let me open it to some questions. My guess is There are lots of them. I would even say that the size of this audience gives you some sense of how vital these questions are. What resonates with you? What did you hear today? What do you need to challenge? Anybody at all? Who'll get us started? Yeah. Carol.
Oh, no. Knows my name. What I'm not seeing, I guess, in the church today from the younger generation is commitment. Somewhere along the way, they're looking for maybe it's entertainment. They're looking for superficial things. And I think maybe that might have part of the thing to do with this, the separation between the two is how do you reach those people that don't want to get committed now versus the ones that are from the older generation who have much more commitment. And there's kind of that gap in between where we're not teaching the younger kids to be committed.
Boy, I will respond to that right back and say that I please hear me being very kind. Just as you're saying that, if you could watch the faces of millennials in the room, they're offended at the very statement you're making. The commitment level is to different things. And they would challenge that the church has gotten sideways by being committed to the wrong things. That their commitment to relationship and community is significantly higher, I find. Than a lot. The commitment to the institution and to the programs, no doubt about it, I would tell you that there's a high commitment from the generations ahead of me, comparative. But when it comes to actually making a difference in the world and knowing the community and being Christ in the everyday workplace, I find the millennials to be far more committed than my generation. You know, I am challenged by them. It's refreshing to me to hear them engage. What's your experience, guys?
Yeah, I would concur. I think we've typically identified faithful people as those who go to church three times a week. So our barometer for faithfulness, when we would pick deacons at the old church, they would say, well, he's a faithful brother. He's there Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, gives well. So that measures commitment. I'm thankful that the millennials measure commitment differently.
Yeah.
Because they're looking at service. They're looking at authentic faith, authentic spirituality. And they have something to offer, I think, those of us who come from a different generation.
Now, I'll jump to Carol's defense here for a minute, then jump to her side. And, Rich, you and I have talked about this, so come on. One of the things I want to raise up here is we've done house groups before. I mean, I understand the question around commitment being a different one than just different behaviors or practices or reliability or whatever. But I can tell you, you know, I remember doing a house group with Agnes up at our house, and we fixed this great meal, and no one showed up, even though 20 had RSVP'd that they were coming. And then the next night, we just said, well, forget it. We'll just, you know, we won't do much. And we had 40 in our house, so we had to rush out to the neighbors and get something. We have different behaviors. We've expressed our own frustration at moments of what it's like to work with them. And it's not that they're not committed. It's just that they're valuing things differently. And that's... Yeah.
That See, I think that's a maturity issue. I don't equate that with spiritual commitment. I just equate that with maturation. If you're going to say you're going to go to a dinner, go to a dinner. It doesn't matter if it's a church dinner or a professional dinner. Attendance, I think, is factored in there, but spiritual commitments, I think, are still very strong. They're just expressed entirely differently,
yeah.
I think.
And I do think that, Rick, that we have we are seeing some cultural shifts that are affecting all the generations,
yeah.
And we're tending to blame a lot of those cultural shifts on the young generation, when, in fact, those same behaviors, to your point, a gal was telling me that she's trying to do this, let's get the elders with people to meet, and she invited three elders, and she invited four families that all happened to be baby boomer families all to her home for a dinner, and no one showed. No one RSVP'd. And what I told her, I coached her, I said, if you want to get, especially some of the younger generation, try walking up to them. Don't send them an email. Walk up to them and say, I would like to have you in our home this Saturday at 6 p.m. And get the skin in the game. Here's the second thing I'd tell you. Don't only get the millennials at the leadership table with you. Get skin in the game. Quit trying to technologically relate when it comes to spirituality. For millennials, spirituality is a new level of commitment. Texting, tweeting, and Facebook posts are not going to get me. Get in the game. And that means skin on skin. Real relationship. And that's a big deal. And I think I amen all of that. Anybody else tired of texting, tweeting, and Facebook posting? I mean, it's just exhausting me. Yeah.
Very good. Stanley, you had a question or a point to make.
Question or statement. I really like Chris Goldman's statement about churches don't need to be saying my mission or my goal is to try to get more young people into our congregation, because it needs to be bigger than that. A lot of congregations did not see the vision 10, 20, 30 years ago. The young people were not there. Leadership, for whatever reason, did not plan. And there are no young people in some Churches of Christ up there in the northern Bay Area where I'm at. And I don't know. It may take 20 to 30 years to get young people back, because they come back through family. They come back through little kids. But I really think I like what Chris said. We need to have a bigger vision of we need to be loving God, loving others, and then getting young people to the table and put them in the vision, as opposed to they're not the vision, where, you know, the church is bigger than any one segment of group. So I kind of just like that statement.
Yeah, and I say, Chris, I do as well. Jason made the point, this is not just impacting churches. This is impacting Bible lectures. This is impacting Pepperdine and the way we actually engage young people. And we will be forever chasing, going down all kinds of bunny trails, if we don't, in fact, just link to a much bigger vision. So I that was a great point. Other questions, concerns, experiences that you've had that you'd like to raise? Yes.
I'm wondering, what kind of levels of complexity are we looking at when we're looking at millennials from, say, a cultural point of view? Because we've noticed, those of us who've been coming to lectureships for 20 years, that the churches or Christians that come to Pepperdine tend to be of one flavor, those who go to Abilene, another flavor, Freed Hardeman, Florida Bible College for the non-institutional group, et cetera. Are millennials the same in Texas as they are in the Sonoma County, the Greater Bay Area? Are they the same in Seattle or Portland versus the Midwest?
So I think the internet has been a leveling field in a lot of ways. I mean, I remember when I was a kid and I went to California on a trip, I heard music that I'd never heard before. Now, a new album gets dropped, everyone all over the world hears it immediately. And so I think there's a leveling effect in terms of evening out youth culture, and that affects millennials in a lot of ways. I think that the problems that we've been dealing with, this is the gift that the West Coast has to bring to the rest of the U.S. The problems that we've been dealing with for the last 15 to 20 years are the problems that are going to affect Texas and the South in the next 5 years. And we have we may not know the answer, but we may understand the questions a little bit better. And that's a real gift that we have to offer in terms of what can the West Coast do for the American culture.
Yeah, I would say you can never, ever generalize, ever. you look at millennials and they're just as diverse as the baby boomers. You've got millennials who love high liturgy. You've got atheist millennials. You've got millennials who have a strong allegiance to our tradition. What about urban millennials, suburban millennials, Hispanic millennials? Millennials for whom English is a second language. So when you're dealing with a generational band, you have as much flex within that band as you do with any generation. So I would be identifying the millennials in your area, in your neighborhood, where your church is, and starting with that demographic profile, contextualizing it, as opposed to trying to consider the broadest expanses of millennials.
We have a question here.
Well, this is kind of a question / comment more. So I do college ministry at Oregon State University, and one of the things that we just had that was valuable, we had a a lot of questions about women's roles and what are we going to do with women's roles. And so we studied as a leadership, and we went and had a meeting together, and we invited all of the congregation. And the one thing that the millennials, all of my college students, are asking is, well, is this just going to be them coming in and just laying down from on high what we're going to do? Because I don't care. I'm not coming. Yeah. And I said, no, this is going to be a conversation, and it's going to be a Bible study together. And you can bring and share. And so they came in, they brought, they shared, they were a part of the conversation. Because we brought them on board, they're willing to go pretty much anywhere we're going because they know we're trying to stay true to Scripture and live it out too. And so having, I heard you say it, of them having a place at the table, but I wonder how do we get other leaderships to say, we're going to invite them to come and be a part of our, you know, typically the elders are making all the decisions. So how do we bring in these other guys to ask or be able to ask questions, part of the planning, part of the visioning in our churches when they're so afraid to let it go?
Paul, did you have a question? Yeah.
Family dynamics over the years have changed, and the millennials are facing a different family situation, relational situation, than what we did as baby boomers or before. How is that affecting their response to especially established religions? I mean, do they, when they think of the idea of father, is it a positive or is it a negative? And what can we as churches do to help get around that?
You know, one of the things you're pointing out there is really key. The millennials are facing a future unlike any other generation. And we need to acknowledge that. I would not trade graduating out of college with what was before me for what my kids are facing in their generation ever. You know, you get your degree, why not start your career? There's no question about it. These students are paying more than any other generation has ever paid for their college education, and on comparison, being paid less. And it is stupefying. It's dumbfounding. You know, I played the game. I went through the system you set up, and the rewards are not there. So they're beginning to question everything. And if I were in their shoes, I would too. I would question the validity of the 4-year university, which they are. I would question the traditional route. Here's a great example of it. In about 4 weeks, there's a friend of ours who will get her associate's degree and her high school diploma on the same weekend. She'll enter UW as a junior, and her question is, do I want to graduate with my 4-year degree in 18 months, or do I want to string it out for that college experience, and what does that really buy me? More and more of the younger generation are starting to say, I feel used by the system, so I'm going to use the system, and I'm going to work through it. So this all comes into play. It changes the family. It changes family dynamics, education. Everything is different. And so a lot of our approaches that are painting with a broad brush simply don't work because there is no brush that can paint this picture. It is individual, and that's where you have to hit. You have to individually know people and really address their questions. What are you finding?
I think in my context, nearly everybody's from somewhere else. Everybody's a transplant. Some people can stay for a while. Some people can't afford to stay for a while. Our retirees have to retire somewhere else because it's too expensive to live in San Jose. And so church functions in a surrogate family for us naturally in a way that it may not have to do so in other communities. And I think there's a key there in a way. Because if it's in your DNA as a church community that I'm going to be that grandfather to that brand new couple that has two kids that's trying to figure out how to put the car seat in the car, that's trying to figure out how to deal with a screaming toddler at church, I'm going to be the one that walks beside them and says, you know what? I've dealt with this. Let me walk beside you. And you may not have answers, but at least you're there. And create a culture in your church that says, when I see a young adult, I'm going to have 5 people talk to them before they get out the door so they can slip out, so that they know they're going to be valued, and then empower them to do something about it. Church should function as a surrogate family to the orphan and the widow. I think it needs to function all that more in a generation that has a broken history and a broken past.
We have run out of time for today. Jason, thank you. Would you tell us a little bit about what we can expect tomorrow?
So tomorrow, part two of this conversation, but with a different set of panelists, we'll be thinking about the ecumenical question. How do we find partners to help us? Partners in other churches, partners in society, partners who can help us do things that we can't do on our own. If we're in a world where we need resources beyond what we have, skills beyond what we have, know-how beyond what we have, who do we need to partner with?
We look forward to that conversation tomorrow. Let me also let you know that Thursday night at 9 o'clock, Pepperdine has partnered with the Barna Group over a landmark study, really, looking at the present and future state of Christian leadership in our churches. In other words, what's going on with our pastors and preachers across the U.S., across denominations. And David Kinnaman is going to be here, and it's a fascinating study. And it may provide some interesting insight for you as well. Hope you'll be a part of that. Thanks for being a part of today. We hope that you'll be back for the conversation tomorrow. Let's thank our panelists. Would you please?